Hey, hey, welcome back, AIMP Nashville Pubcast listeners. This is your host, Tim Hunzi. Today, we have part two of our episode with Scott Hendricks because, again, as I mentioned in the first one, he just gave us so much knowledge that we didn't want you to miss out on any of it. So sit back and enjoy the ride, my friends. It is going to be a treat. I know it. You just had this innate love of recording. What is it that you, and of course you did a lot of study, like it, you may not have went to school for the degree, but you put the hours in, as you said, you put well more than 10,000 hours in. And then of course, when you mention the name Jimmy Bowen, you say it, I would reckon a lot of people these days know the name, but they don't know how iconic that was. I remember because when he came to Nashville and you working with him, he was bringing a new sound. He was doing stuff a different way. Like he really changed Nashville in the recording process, as I recall it, because I came in at the tail end of, you were also studying under somebody that was quite a master and a legend, and it was really changing the way things were done in town, correct?
You know, like I said, I didn't know what a producer was. So once I started working in the studio, I worked with a lot of different producers. Though I never worked directly for Bowen, I mean, I was there every night for 9 months as an assistant, even though they don't call it that. Never got a credit on the record or anything, but I watched how he did things. And when I became when I got to sit in the pilot seat of the engineering desk, you know, a lot of engineers, I mean, a lot of producers, very successful ones. I mean, I'd recorded some iconic albums under some big time producers. Jerry Crutchfield, we went to the Bahamas to do Tanya Tucker's biggest album and on and on and on. And I got to see different producers in the way that they did things differently. And I've soaked every bit of that in. Some of it wasn't good. Some of it I was like, oh, wow, I wouldn't have said that. Why would you position your artist and that make your artist feel bad for not singing right? You know, I got to see a lot of good and bad. And so when it came time when we started doing Restless Heart, it wasn't like I had to go turn on a producer switch. You know, I'd made so many records by that point. It's just this either sounded right to me or it didn't. It wasn't like it was a completely different discipline than engineering. I was doing both. I was engineering and producing at the same time. And I continued to engineer and produce as far as recording and mixing. Eventually, I gave up the tracking part of it because it's just a lot to handle when you're dealing with a full band, trying to get the engineering of it and then producing it. But I mixed, you know, all the Allen, the Faith Hill stuff in the early days. I mixed all of that for years. I didn't record all of it. As far as the tracking the band, I did all the overdubs because that's what I knew how to do. But I learned so much from producers. And then one day in the middle of the 80s, something like that, Jim Ed Norman, who was the president of Warner Records, who was a big mentor for me, he called me one day and he goes, man, there's a guy from Muscle Shoals moving to Nashville and he's looking for an engineer to work with. And he goes, I know you're producing Restless Heart at the time, but then that's cool. You can do that on the side, but would you consider mixing something for him to see if you're his guy? And I said, absolutely. So I was mixing every day, pretty much at a place called The Castle out in Franklin. So someone sent me a 24 track tape out there. And I told this guy, his name was Barry Beckett, I said, why don't you show up tomorrow morning? I mean, mix it, today and tonight, and then tomorrow morning you show up and we'll get this closed out. So I mixed as well as I can mix. And by that time, I had done probably 40 number ones as a mixer. And I thought I had nailed this mix. I don't even remember who the artist was, but I thought I had it nailed. And Barry comes in with that very intimidating look of his and that cigarette hanging out of his top lip. And I said, why don't you go in there and listen to this mix and here's the volumes, here's the speakers and blah, blah, blah. I'll be getting some coffee. So about 20 minutes later or so, Barry comes out of there with that cigarette in his lip. He goes, "You ready?" And I said, "Sure." So I roll up to the console, stretch my shoulders, and said, "All right, where do you want to start?" And he reaches up and he grabs all the faders and pulls them down. And I'm just sitting there like, who would do this? I was so stunned. I didn't even know what to say. It's like the audacity.
Should add that this isn't like digital boards. Like when he did that, he just erased your mix.
Well, in a way, I still had it kind of, I had it documented, but it didn't. It's just the fact that he did it. And I just was so stunned. I was didn't say anything. He goes, "We're going to start with the hi-hat." And he pulls up the hi-hat fader, one fader. And it's the hi-hat. And I was just thinking, oh my God, who is this guy? What are we doing here? Anyway, long story short, by the time we got through with that process, I was a dog with the tail between his legs. I could not believe how much better that mix was than what I had. I noticed it right away, and I was like, oh, I just was taken to school by a stranger I didn't know. And I said, "Barry, I don't know what I got to do, but I want to be by your side every day. I've never been taught this." And so he chose me. And for the next 5 years, I probably spent more time with Barry Beckett than either of our wives. I learned so much about feel. He was the leader of the Muscle Shoals rhythm section. He recorded all these iconic artists, Aretha Franklin and on, Bob Dylan and a gazillion others. And he was just a master musician, a keyboard player. But just his sense of timing and feel, I can't even describe how much I learned. And as I went through that process, working with Barry, while also mixing other people's records and doing Restless Heart, it just made me better. And I've never had a mentor or a teacher better than Barry. Sadly, he's no longer with us. I count my blessings all the time for Barry. And to this day, when I'm working on something, almost every day, I'm not kidding, I'll say, "Wonder what Barry would have thought of this. Oh, Barry would have loved this, because the technology we have right now would have blown his mind, and that we could manipulate so many things. And we were trying to do that when we didn't have the technology." And he would be a tall cotton if he were here today using the technology we have. It'd be crazy.
That is a lot of work, and that's wearing a lot of hats, and also having the right personality, because our business, as you know, is super relational. My whole career is built off relationships, establishing relationships built on trust and people having confidence that you're going to do what you're going to say, but also being able to communicate and work and guide people, and also being willing to stand up and fight for what you think's right, which sometimes can be a bit challenging.
I'll give you a really interesting new fresh example for me that where you're always learning. I've produced, I think, two number one songs with Blake Shelton and Gwen Stefani duets on the Blake albums, but it's Blake and Gwen singing. So I've recorded her many times. About a little over a year ago, I was at their house in California, and she goes, "I want you to produce me." I said, and I looked around like, "Is there somebody behind me?" And I was like, "Me? You want me to produce Gwen Stefani? Are you kidding me?" And she goes, "No, I really want you to do this." And I said, "Gwen, I do country." So she goes, "I don't want a country record, but I just know you're the right guy for me to do this." And I was like, "Have you lost your mind, or what's going on here?" Anyway, long story short, I agreed to do it. She came to town. We did one song. It turned out really well. And then she said, I've recorded my entire album with these Swedish pop producers, very successful. They've had lots of success. And I don't really like what I'm hearing. I want to redo the whole album with you." And so she played me that. And it was all, typical Swedish pop production. A lot of synth, a lot of fake everything. And I said, "I'll do it on one condition. If you come to Nashville and let me take you in the studio with me, you, and a guitar player, and let's find out what's really about these songs. There's so much production on these ones that she recorded that it was distracting from the song. I said, I want to see these songs naked. And so she agreed. She came to Nashville. We spent the better part of a day with me, an acoustic guitar player, and her in the studio, and broke all these songs down to an acoustic guitar vocal. And she was crying several times during the day, like of joy, tears of joy, like, I can't believe what this song sounds like. So simplified. And I said, this is what I want to play the musicians when we record the full band, because if they were to have heard the demo of the Swedish thing, it would have been so misleading for them. Hearing the song naked with this acoustic guitar will give them a much bigger canvas to be able to create on. And so we did that, and she came to Nashville, and I put together a different band, a different studio, a different engineer. Everything was different than I'd ever done. I wanted to completely change it all up. But anyway, it was one of the most magical tracking weeks I can remember, because she was just literally almost crying every song. Just like, this, I can't believe what I'm hearing. These musicians in this town are so, so gifted. And it's not like I went out there and said, I want you to play this part. They came up and created their parts. And me, my job, I learned a long time ago. In the very, very, very beginning, I did try to like, all right, here's exactly what I want you to play. And I found out quickly that they knew more than I did. So I would just try to keep them out of the bar ditches. If they went too far, I'd poke them back into the road. So let's start again, or let's take a break and come back fresh, or whatever I had to do to reset. They were free to create without being confined by the pop demo. And it was just one of the most fun, fresh, organic things I've ever experienced. Her album is out. It's called Bouquet. And there's a deluxe version now with acoustic versions and all that stuff on it. But it was so much fun to do, because we were not pinned in by anything.
Over the years, what have you seen in your experiences some of the biggest changes in the music industry? Good, bad, indifferent? I'm just curious of your perspective.
One of the bigger changes, and it's sad to me, I don't want to be that old guy that's, the old crazy guy that's talking about how it used to be. We used to blah, blah, blah. I don't want to be that guy. But I was, I owned a publishing company for 20 years called Big Tractor Publishing. And
a successful publishing company, we should
have. Yeah, it was a very successful publishing company. And we had a ball doing it, at least for the most part. And, I think what's sad to me right now is that this town used to be more about songwriters writing songs for artists than it is now. Now, the artists, whether they are songwriters or not, they're getting in the rooms with songwriters that are songwriters, and they get their name and credit on the songs as though they are the songwriters. And it's not as much about the true songwriters who wrote songs, with their favorite writers, and would go pitch those songs. And I probably get as many songs pitched to them as anybody in this town, because Blake is always, we're always looking. So I get to hear a lot of songs, but there's only a handful of those artists that are even looking at outside songs. Well, they're wanting to write them. So there is such a small, much smaller bubble of people writing all the same material. If you look at the charts, it's really not that many writers, and they're writing them with the artists, versus in the past, and people talk about the 90s, it's because we had professional songwriters that were writing the scripts, and the artists were the actors, and they were singing this, the song of the scripts. And now it's like all the writers, all the actors decided, you know what? Not only am I going to act, I'm also going to write the script. And in a lot of cases, they're producing themselves. They're directing the film themselves. And I've seen that trend. I don't know where it's going to go, but it's interesting to me that it just seems more a little bit more formulaic in some ways.
That's fun. That's really neat. That's have a unique experience as a producer to bring to life something an artist heard that they were missing. They didn't know what they were missing. They knew they were missing it. And you helped that vision come to life is kind of the, I would think, part of the really rewarding side of what you get to do in your career, you know?
Yeah, that is actually recording. Part of the interesting thing and this happens more in the pop world than it does here, but she was used to going into, you know, the songwriter / producer's house and singing it a couple of times. And then they would manipulate whatever they had in those two takes to create the final vocal. And I said, I'm not going to do that. And so I hired a company in Los Angeles. This was my sixth time to do this, that I've hired this company to set up a portable studio in the house, Blake's. I can't tell you, almost probably 90% of everything you've ever heard on Blake was recorded in a closet or a bedroom or something like that. Because instead of going to a studio, we go to a house and I'll just run the cables around the corner and I'll sit in the hallway. He'll be in a closet or he'll be in a bedroom. And that's what this was. I put Quinn in a bedroom and I was in the living room and we did all her vocals at her house, where I could spend way more time, you know, to make sure I got the emotion of the song. I don't care about the tuning. I don't care about anything else. I can fix anything else. But as long as I got the emotion there, and it wasn't just a couple of takes, is we would sing a song and sing it again the next day a little bit, maybe the next day a little bit. Just we would try different things. And it was just a complete departure from what she had been used to doing in the pop world. And it turned out really good. You can hear the emotion in her vocal now.
You've also spent a lot of time as an A&R guy as well, running labels and as a producer. But what are the qualities you look for in an artist before you decide to commit to them? Because again, which we haven't really touched on, when you commit to an artist and a project, you're committing a big chunk of your life, like months and months and possibly years these days. But, and for you, like a long time, because you've stayed in Blake's career for a very long time. But what is it that you see that makes you want to work with an artist? What is it, that innate quality?
I wish it was a simple answer. It's not. And most of the time for me, I want something, and most of the artists I've actually chosen to work with as a producer, I want something unique sounding. I need to know their point. What is it they want to do? What do they want to say? It's got to be somebody that is very distinct sounding. I mean, and most of the people I've signed or worked with, Trace Atkins, nobody sounds like Trace, you know, and things like that. These are great singers, and as much as anything, a lot of them are great writers. You know, working with Dan Shea, they write everything. So, man, it's a lot easier for me on that regard. I don't have to find songs and spend days and days, weeks and weeks finding songs. It's amazing how much time I'd spend looking at songs. But for me, it's, are they unique? And, you know, do I think they can be an entertainer and capture? I've worked with a lot of artists that I didn't realize until later. They were great singers, but they weren't entertainers. I've had a lot of failures too. I mean, there's many successes and I probably had more failures. You counted them up. But in a lot of those people that didn't work out were unbelievably talented. They just didn't work as hard as the rest of us. You know, and I can tell you, every single person you see out there that's making it, they may look like they're not working that hard, but let me tell you, they are working hard. They are doing everything possible to help them, their careers. And there's a lot of artists that just simply, you know, get to the point where I don't want to do any more radio interviews. Well, you're not going to be on radio very long if you take that attitude. You've got to work harder than the next guy. I look for work ethic. Every artist is so different. I appreciate all of them, you know,
That's what makes them unique. They each bring something special to the table.
Yeah, some of them, you know, some of them, like last night I went to the finale of this new TV show coming out next year called The Road. They filmed it at the Ryman. The two people on it was Blake and Keith Urban, and I signed Keith Urban's record contract, whatever that was, and we were talking about last night. You know, I don't know if somebody like that in this day's time would make it, because in those days, we didn't have the social media. He spent all his time working on his craft and perfecting his live show and his writing and blah, blah, blah. You know, and if that same guy came along right now, would he get signed to a record company? Probably not, because he doesn't have the TikTok numbers or the social numbers or the Instagram or whatever they want. You know, it's not, they didn't spend the time on gathering that. They spent their time on perfecting their crafts. And there, I've had a lot of artists that I've signed like that. Another guy named Hunter Hayes, who unbelievably talented. I mean, like so talented. He's in the top five talented most people I've ever met in my life. He's no longer active right now, but I always have based on, if someone just has sheer talent, we'll figure out where they pop out at some point. Like,
that's key.
The AIMP Nashville Pubcast is hosted by yours truly, Tim Hunzi. Producer, Brandon Harrington. Mixing and editing by Casey Porter. And this has been a Dime Collective production.